Hi, this is David Wilk for Publishing Talks, a podcast about the publishing industry. Today I'm interviewing Mac Slocum of MacSlocum.com. Mac, how are you?
I'm doing very well. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Good to talk to you today. So you're kind of an unusual person in some respects because your background is pretty various.
Yeah.
Maybe you could talk a little bit about the different things you've done and how they relate to the web publishing business.
Sure, absolutely. I've been very fortunate to spend some quality time at a number of really great organizations, and it's been all over the place. Whether it's straightforward news on the journalism side, my background and training is in journalism, or it's spending some time at O'Reilly, particularly with the Tools of Change for Publishing division, where I really got a good crash course in the book publishing side of things. Whether intended or not, I actually don't think it was intended at all. I've amassed a lot of perspectives and sort of skill sets that have more to do with digital content, regardless of whether or not we're talking about media, journalism, or book publishing. It's really formed a lot of my perspective on these things, and it's interesting to be there. I think that sort of plays into that sort of unusual circumstance.
Well, yeah, I think there's a nice, people use the word convergence all the time, but I think there is, you may even define it in some ways just in your background and experience. I think the and as we had talked a little bit once before, that there are points of convergence where, because of the way the web operates, traditional media meet in this place, which is very different from where they came from.
Yes, I think that's definitely the case. And one of the big things that I've noticed, even over the last, I think, 5 or 6 years or so, particularly in the last year and a half, as the economy has tanked and a lot of the cracks in the foundation have become more overt. I think some of them were covered a bit in the past. Is that fundamentally media's place? And by media, I don't just mean journalism. I mean book publishing as well, film, television, music. Fundamentally, there's a massive shift that's taken place that I feel like a lot of the established organizations, the biggest thing that they're struggling with is this idea that the consumer is now in control. It's a huge, huge shift. And everything that I have done and paid attention to, everything I end up writing about, it all seems to gravitate back towards that fundamental shift that now consumers have the opportunity to choose, whereas in the past we were very, very limited by the types of media that we can consume, when we can consume it, how we can consume it, and now that's not an issue anymore. I mean, I can watch a television show whenever I want. I can access content in a variety of different forms on different screens, print, digital. It doesn't make a difference, really.
Right, and also the difference between a creator and a consumer has changed, because even as you can consume media in almost of any variety of forms and times that you want, you can also become a participant in the media conversation.
Absolutely.
Because the tools are so readily available.
Yeah, absolutely. On the journalism side, one of those secondary shifts after the customer equation, the consumer equation, one of the secondary shifts is that content has opened up two lanes now. You know, not only as a content creator in a traditional journalism format would I be somebody who maybe was reporting and writing an article and publishing it through whatever platform I have available to me, but now my readers, who previously were sort of this mute mass of people that I had no idea who they were, but I knew that my stuff was going out there, now they can talk back. And that's a huge change too, right? So whether it's something as minute as that, where you've got somebody directly responding to a piece of content that you wrote, or those people now feeling just as empowered as you do as a content creator to go and to create their own stuff. I mean, that's such a dramatic shift. I know that it's very troublesome for some people, and I know that it's a very tough time for a lot of people. But on the flip side of that, and what I choose to focus on is just, I think it's so amazing.
No, I agree. I would.
So many things that you can do, and so many opportunities, both in terms of expression, community. You know, the web allows people to gather around affinity instead of geography, instead of opportunity, all those types of things. If you're on the web and you have the ability to search and get around, you know, you can find groups of like-minded people who are interested in the same things, right? I mean, that's huge. That's right. A huge deal.
No, of course, all of that creates all of these pressures that you started to allude to earlier on existing media businesses, because they're built around a different model altogether.
Yeah.
You know, this idea that the consumer is primary, I happen to agree with you very, very much so. And, you know, I think that we've spent years hearing constantly that the content is king. And I actually think that it's not true, in the sense that, the consumer is really the king.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the sooner that organizations, both traditional and upstart, reject that notion that content is king. Particularly, I think there's actually an addendum to that. In the past, it was my content is king.
Yeah, right.
Yours not necessarily, but mine definitely. I think that the sooner that if you're going to change a business, you can start a new business that's in a content space. It's all about serving your consumer, whomever that may be. But
right, and of course the question that a lot of people will ask immediately, because I've had this question asked of me, if the focal point is serving the consumer, but then how do you build a model where the creator of content, whether it's the individual writer or everyone involved in the chain beyond that helps the publishing and distribution process, how do they get paid in this new world?
Yeah.
I think that's the biggest challenge, the one that everyone is trying to figure out. And, I know you've talked about this on your website, partly in the context of newspaper media or news media, struggling to find a new business model as the old one has really unraveled in a very short period of time.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it applies to book publishing as well. And, again, let me just start with a caveat that I really have a lot of respect and sympathy for folks who they were so used to working in one particular domain, and for decades it was essentially the same. The deal was essentially the same, whether that was on the journalism side or the book publishing side. You worked your way up, you achieved a certain role, you worked hard, you created content in a particular way, and there was a business component that was associated with it that worked and was fairly mature. And then you create a digital format in which the entire model, all of the lock-in of the previous models, is now gone. And I understand why that's so disruptive and kind of hurtful in a lot of ways. So I really understand that. But there's a flip side to that, too. So there's all of that. There's the psychological and human toll that goes along with it, and I do not underplay that by any stretch. But the flip side of it is, if you're talking about, in sort of a cold and calculating way, if you are talking about an environment that is determined purely by consumer wishes and consumer interests, and this is an environment that is inherently dispersed, where people go where they want, when they want, how they want, I don't think that you can try to drag a business that was built under a different model with different lock-ins and different margins into this digital environment and expect it not only to segue, but to survive. I don't think that works. And I know that there are people who are much, much smarter than me, who have a finer business acumen than I do, who I know are working very hard to figure out ways of doing this. That's why we see on the journalism side lots of discussions about paywalls. That's why we see on the book publishing side lots of concern and discussions about digital price points for ebooks. I get it. I totally understand it. I just think that the way that this environment is, the field of play that we have in front of us, is just not conducive to trying to transition something that was built under a different rule set.
So, and I tend to agree with you. So the question then is, what do you think will happen with paywalls, let's say,
yeah.
because those seem to be like a rear guard action almost. You're trying to fight to retain your what you own, and I think it is maybe a kind of dying move. On the other hand, it may be necessary as a transition, because you think about any existing business that wants to transition to a new model has to keep on doing what it's been doing in order to earn some cash while it does this transition.
Absolutely.
And at the same time innovate in a way that they have never done before.
Yep.
Into a space which nobody knows. There are no rules, there's no guideposts, there's nobody with an answer saying, standing on the other side of that chasm saying, just send me your lifeline, I'll hold on while you cross this rope, you cross this wire across the big chasm. So they're having to build a bridge to an unknown future at the same time as they're trying to live in the present world.
Right.
And that, I think, is a very challenging
thing
to be doing. So you see that with paywalls in the newspaper business, and you saw a similar thing in music, windowing in DVDs,
yep.
Book publishers trying to keep the price of digital as high as possible, kind of using an old model there, cost up model, or retail price down model. So, but what do you think will happen? I guess, I'm sort of interested in anybody who has an idea about what's going to happen. I think
sure.
It would be really interesting.
I think that there's some very positive signs, but they're not necessarily positive for people who are hoping to make an elegant transition. I don't think there's any such thing as an elegant transition. I think that what's probably going to happen is the traditional business as it is, I don't think that it's going to go away. I don't think that the book retail channels are necessarily going to go away. I don't think that book publishing is going to go away. I don't think that newspapers are necessarily going to go away. I do think that they're going to get smaller, and they're going to drop down to a level that is appropriate, given that consumers have multiple choices now. If that was the only choice in the past, well, you could build it on up, and you could take lots of risks, and you could do kind of crazy things because the money was just rolling in because that's all people had. But now there's many other choices. Radio had to adapt when television came along. Radio found its natural level after all of that. Radio's not gone. I listen to radio all the time. But it's not the end-all, be-all that it once was, because there's different options. So I think that a very similar thing will happen with a lot of these other businesses. I actually think that a lot of businesses, the traditional ones, they're not going to go away. They're going to get a lot smaller. They're going to come down to a level that is much more appropriate for the actual revenue they're going to be generating, simply because there's so much other choice. Now, the bright points that I was talking about earlier are things like there are web companies, content-centric web companies, that have found a way to become viable and sustainable. A company like TechCrunch, Mike Carrington's company, started as just a website, and now it's diversified out. Paidcontent.org, which was sold to The Guardian a couple of years ago, same thing. I look at those things as success stories. Somebody who is used to working and running a business that makes $50 million a year, $100 million a year, would look at those things and say, that's a rounding error on our P&L. That's what the money that kind of organization makes doesn't mean anything. It means something to me as somebody who comes from a world where we're building it up instead of trying to transition it over. And I think that what will end up happening is smart organizations, and some organizations are going to go away. That's just the nature of the beast. But smart organizations have already got things in motion that allow them to take advantage of all this experimentation and opportunity that exists elsewhere in the digital realm, where they are building something, not trying to save something, not trying to transition something, but they're building something over there while they're also trying to figure out what to do and how to best manage their core business. And I think, it's the seesaw. At a certain point, it will iron out. It will level out. But it's going to be really tricky. It's not going to be pretty. Clay Shirky says this all the time, that this whole transition that we're going through, it's not going to be fun.
It's not going to be fun. It's going to be fun for some people.
Yes.
But it won't be fun for a lot of people, especially if their expectations are that they can keep on doing what they were doing in the past and have it work.
I think you just need to let that go.
Yeah,
honestly, the best thing you could do is just is really to allow yourself to get rid of that.
Well, I think
that is such a handcuff on.
Well, I also think the other thing that you said that I would respond to there is the notions of scale. You know, it in certain environments, a large scale, even multinational corporation grew up. Not necessarily, you know, we don't always believe that those were healthy, good for. I mean, I remember back to a period when there was a large discussion about the danger of conglomerization in the book business. And now you have potentially the reaping of that, of those concerns. And that is, you know, we have seven large book publishers controlling probably 75-80% of the trade sales.
Right.
You have two major national book chains controlling probably 90% of the sales on the ground. You have one giant retailer online controlling probably 85% of online book sales.
Yep.
You know, those kinds of centralizations are not necessarily positive in a democratic society. They were private business occurrences, and they came along at a time when the notion of public control of private industry and interest was actually at an all-time low.
Right.
And it may be that it turns out that the people who were predicting that those were bad things for a lot of reasons, maybe for different reasons than they predicted, have begun to come true, and kind of in a natural way, that the large-scale entities may not adapt well to change.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's a big. These are big behemoth organizations that have hedged a lot of bets on things, working under the assumption that certain amounts of revenue were going to come in. And I understand why, because the revenue did come in, right?
Right, and it was also it was efficient in a commodity business where you're talking about you know, the moving physical objects. You
right.
get efficiencies of scale. And in moving digital objects, you may not.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think the game has changed completely in that respect. The whole notion of, it's funny, when I went to O'Reilly, I spent, I think, maybe about a month just reading everything I could get my hands on. Because I had only sort of a cursory knowledge of book publishing at that point, so I just read everything I could get. And I got to tell you, I was shocked. This isn't about O'Reilly, this is about book publishing. I was shocked at the amount of waste that's involved with the shipping, the returns. You know, it just, you look at it and you go, wait. That's the way you run it? That's the way you came up with? And
a
now you're
crazy
upset
business.
Because somebody's come along with a system whereby the actual content, which for, 99% of its life cycle, exists in a digital form until it's printed. So now that content is actually being distributed in its digital form, which is inherently more efficient, doesn't bring on any of those cost burdens in terms of shipping and returns, and that's just better. You know, that's just a better model. Now, if you actually want a printed edition of something, sure, of course you can get that, but you also can get it at the moment when you want it, right? I mean, that's why POD is so interesting. It's just you've got this opportunity there to satisfy that sort of natural urge towards a physical product, but you don't have the inefficiencies that come along with it. Now, I know that POD is not at a level that is duplicatable across all trade, for example. I know that. But the idea is there, and it's gaining steam, and fundamentally it's a better model. It's more efficient. So,
right, and it also, because so many of their true costs of distribution have actually been externalized or buried in margins that may not be sustainable anymore.
Right.
The digital print technologies can only get better, and you know, theoretically should be able to provide more options. I mean, it clearly, you know, there is still a place for printing large quantities of a book for a large number of people. But I think what you're going to see is segmentation in the marketplace that wasn't possible before.
Yep.
You know, it used to be that if you said, I want to print, I only have 500 people who I know are going to buy this book, you were stuck. You'd have to print 1,000 or 2,000 connect and chase a market that essentially didn't exist.
Right.
Today, you can decide, if you want to print a very small number of copies or even print none until you found the customer for that book. Now, theoretically, then, it just sets up a different kind of supply chain, because instead of throwing books into stores and hoping that people buy them, you are going to go after people in their areas of interest. As you discussed before, you know, the web enables niche communities. It enables areas, people of common interest to gather together. If you can find those people successfully and give them a value proposition that makes sense, then you can sell them things that you would never have been able to do in any other context.
Right. Isn't that cool?
It is cool.
God, that's cool.
No, I think it's
so
tremendously cool.
That we have that option now. You know, that,
right.
That's just there are times where I, you know, I take that step back and I just look at what has developed even over the last 10 years or so. You're going, my God, I mean, the things that we can do now, the opportunities that are available to us, I understand the fear component, but the flip side to this is those are markets that were never served before.
Right. No, it's like looking at television in 1946 or 1947,
yeah.
And that's kind of how I feel, even though the disruption is hard on a lot of people, but the opportunity and the excitement that you get from being part of the introduction of a new technology and all of the social and political and business opportunities that it creates should be looked at as a big positive.
Yes, I think that's absolutely true, and I think so much of this to me is psychological. So much of this disruption is psychological. We've got the events as they are playing out, and those are what they are. And you can actually, you know, you can tick them off, whether it's the changing nature of audience, the disruption of digital, those types of things. But psychologically, you know, you have the choice of looking at these things and saying, more people can be served in a more efficient way. More information is available to people than it ever was before. More people are reading now than they ever were before. More people are active consumers of content. Now, whether or not it's the content you want them to have is a different story. So all of that stuff, I mean, I look at those all as positives. And I also look at it as saying, as somebody who likes to create content, I can do that anytime I want. Anytime I want, with really simple tools that allow me to put things out there, whether it's something that I think is worthy of discussion or whether it's something that I just needed as a creative outlet.
Well, let me ask
you. I can't imagine what it would be like if I didn't have that.
I want to ask you about that real quickly before, because I know we're going to have to close soon. But you have something called the fodder network, which is an expression of what you just described. Maybe you could just mention that and talk about it a little bit. I'd be kind of curious.
Sure, sure. It's funny. I started Film Fodder, filmfodder.com. It's going to be 10 years now, which I can't believe. March of 2000 is when that site went up. I started that site, it's a movie site, started it completely because I had some, you know, I had some web skills and I could put things together, but I also come primarily from a writing and journalism background, and I wanted a creative outlet, one that I sort of had the control over, where I could guide it wherever it was going to go. To this day, it remains nothing more than a glorified hobby, but that opportunity to just go buy some server space, install a content management system, which came later. I used to do it all as just flat HTML files and writing directly in them. That opportunity was so liberating. There's a couple sites now. There's TVFodder.com, which is in there too. That was spun off. I am such a huge believer in being able to take advantage of those opportunities, because when I started doing that stuff, there actually were technological obstacles to overcome. You had to understand a little bit about servers. You had to understand a little bit about some of the technology that was involved. You had to know HTML. There wasn't really a good editor that was available to you. But since, you know, in the last 10 years, what's happened is everything's gotten infinitely easier to do exactly what I did 10 years ago. And the trajectory of content creators, as we discussed before, is following that ease of use curve, which to me is just so amazing, so liberating. And who knows what's going to come out of that,
right?
If we've got more content out there, man, there's all kinds of things that can come from that.
No, I think that's terrific, and I think actually quite true. you know, there's, you know, I don't want to sound like a Pollyanna, but I think there's a whole lot more to come.
Absolutely.
So listen, Mac, thank you so much for talking to me. This is David Wilk for Publishing Talks, and I've been talking to Mac Slocum, whose website, if you're interested, is MacSlocum, MacSlocum.com. Thanks, Mac.
Thank you.
Take care.